The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvin Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvin Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. The United States government does so much damage to us here, whether it's destroying families through the war on drugs, making it harder for people to get employment so that they have no choice but to rely on government subsidies, whether it's destroying our school systems by giving us the worst, most expensive education in the world, the United States spending, of course, the second most in the world on education, with the results something like near the 23rd out of 25, something like that. But as much damage as the United States does at home, it doesn't even begin to compare to the amount of damage that the U.S. government does abroad to other countries. You think about what they can do to us, but we can at least technically vote. Multiply that by 1,000, and that's what they do to the people who can't vote them out of office. Now, today we're going to talk a little bit about how we can reduce the government's role in foreign policy. And when I say reduce the government's role, I just mean, how can we make the government damage foreign policy less? How can we get them out of the way so that we can make trade instead of war, so that we can build allies instead of enemies? With me right now is Rob Latham. He is running for Congress in Florida. Rob, let me ask you some of these questions. Where do you think we can reduce government interference abroad?
Well, Arvin, if we look at foreign aid, which is a major component of that, we spend through the State Department about $25 billion a year. I think the largest single disaster and what we can do to help continuation of this disaster is to publicize and realize what's been going on. There's a study out showing the amount of money that the United States has put into Afghanistan between 2002 and 2013. We put $100 billion into that country. It's been a monstrous failure. A study in the Journal of World Affairs says so and details how that's the case. The massive expenditure of that money has not brought the United States or Afghanistan a single sustainable institution or program. USAID, which administers it, has handed almost every project over to independent contractors, and they don't monitor those projects' progress. And so it's just pouring money down a rat hole. That is the largest example financially of the disaster that we've caused. And it doesn't begin to get into the corruption that goes into the hands, and I'm not speaking just of Afghanistan, but the distribution of money is not monitored. We saw just a very few weeks ago some leaks out of some Panamanian organization of different world leaders who have illicit bank accounts and a lot of money flowing under the table. And I think the more publicity that can be generated to expose this corruption will help cause our electorate to say, what are we doing? We're not taking care of people in the United States who need it. We have 14% of the population under the poverty level by our own federal government estimates. And why aren't we taking care of our own people as opposed to sending money abroad, which is not monitored and which ends up in the hands of people who shouldn't have it?
When we talk about $100 billion, it's important to understand not just the amount of money, but what the purchasing power of even $1 is in other countries. You and I know that if you take a dollar to a different country, you can buy more things with that dollar. And if you take it to a place that has like major financial issues, $100 billion in Afghanistan has the purchasing power of a lot more than $100 billion in America. $100 million would be more than enough to start up God knows how many amazing businesses if you just let people keep their own money. Now, what about this? People say that we have this responsibility to help people in other countries. What do you say about that?
Well, we don't have the responsibility to help people in other countries by spending our money, not monitoring it. It doesn't. There's no proven betterment and result. Now, there are exceptions. I mean, and I look at both the last and the current administration on efforts to, and Bill Gates, who was involved, efforts to eradicate or substantially interdict the whole HIV epidemic. There are some worthwhile programs, but the United States government is the worst agency to administer any program effectively. Everything it gets involved in is just a massive waste. And foreign aid itself has many different forms, not just by direct grants of money from the United States State Department. We subsidize commodities. Sugar is something that's been in the news in the last several weeks. The Nabisco Oreo plant in Chicago is shutting down. They're laying off 600 people. They are opening a replacement plant someplace in Mexico. That's where the jobs are going. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, one reason is that the United States pays more for sugar than any other country in the world. It's government policy. And I would argue that that is a part of foreign aid when prices are kept artificially high to help people overseas realize more money for their sugar than it's worth. And I don't think I'm going to be buying too many Oreos in the next few months.
What's especially interesting is that, you know, that really ties into this other type of foreign aid that you're alluding to. Because one foreign aid is you just like steal a bunch of money from Americans and just hand it to somebody else. But this other type of foreign aid comes in the form of these trade barriers, these sanctions, all these kinds of things that are billed as things that help Americans. They're like, yeah, if we have these, you know, massive sugar tariffs and all that, it's going to help Americans. But the reality is it doesn't help Americans. It means that Americans have to pay more for a thing than we otherwise would have. An American company has higher costs. An American company now can afford to has to pay lower salaries because their fixed costs have gone up. That's all that that means. Now, if you're elected, what are some of the things that you'll do? Would you sponsor legislation to get rid of, let's start with the first thing, would you sponsor legislation to get rid of or reduce foreign aid that's done by the government?
Yes, I unqualified. I'd like to see foreign aid eliminated entirely. Failing that, let's adopt a zero-based budgeting approach and reevaluate what the benefit is to spending that $25 billion a year. Certainly, we can use it at home. I will introduce or co-sponsor legislation to give effect to that. It's not the only thing that I will initiate legislation to accomplish. Of course, our military actions overseas, which is military assistance is part of foreign aid. We have to ask the question, why are we providing assistance? The president is in or has been in Vietnam this week on so-called normalizing relations, apparently going to be providing or offering to provide U.S. military equipment to the Vietnamese. I don't understand that. I suspect there are some deals here. I don't know how much of this is our grants, but I'm disappointed to see it. We certainly ought not to be acting as the world's policeman. And as we've said before, there are more than 200,000 troops that we have in 140 countries overseas. Why are we everywhere on Earth? What is the rationale for it? Why are we spending that more than $50 billion a year to support 200,000 troops overseas? Bring them home. Save $50 billion.
It is, absolutely.
It really is a disgrace, and if there is a rationale for it, it has not been clearly articulated by those in Washington.
One of the interesting kind of nuances of this, and I do want to emphasize this, is that when you say that you would shut down, you know, sponsor legislation, shut down foreign aid, that would not apply to private foreign aid. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's very important. I mean, Americans are very generous, and we see the ads on television all the time, help the, whether it's Oxfam or, well, excuse me, there's a, help the children, help any number of worthy causes overseas, maybe Africa, maybe the Middle East. There's a tremendous amount of giving, and I don't have the statistics, but it comes in the billions. Americans are arguably the most generous people in the world, and private organizations are the right kinds of organizations to handle that distribution of foreign aid, precisely because they're not government. They do watch how they spend their money, and they are not simply bureaucrats who are on the federal dime distributing money and don't have the passion and the interest that the private groups do.
And that's like a very important difference, because every time the government takes a dollar away from you or I and gives it to some corrupt government aid organization, they're taking that dollar away from another charity. They're taking that dollar away from a charity on Kickstarter, somebody that has some great idea to improve education, drinking water, whatever they think is most effective, probably based on research and discussion, because as you mentioned, it's their passion, not their governmental assignment. And I think that
exactly correct.
It's we're talking about an improvement in the quality of foreign aid. We're not saying shut down foreign aid. We're saying get the government out of it because they're too incompetent for it. Before we run out of time, if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign and some of your plans for reducing military, for reducing foreign aid, for reducing all these different governmental problems, where should they go?
I'd like them to have a look at my website, robforcongress.org. That's spelled out in full, robforcongress.org. Or frankly, they can give me a call, 850-340-3364. I'd be delighted to discuss these issues, including many other programs in the federal government that need to be shut down, that I will introduce or co-sponsor legislation to give effect to those objectives.
Absolutely. And thanks so much for being on the show today, Rob.
Thanks, Irvin.
You guys, I just finished talking with Rob Latham. He's running for Congress in Florida. Here is a simple and absolute fact. Any congressman of any, whether it's Democrat or Republican, can sponsor legislation to shut down foreign aid. They can sponsor legislation to bring the troops home. And they'll give you some silly excuse, Republicans and Democrats. They'll say something like, listen, if I'm the only one to sponsor it, it won't pass, so there's no reason for me to sponsor it. That's BS. If a Republican sponsors legislation to end foreign aid and other Republicans don't, it shows them to be the liars that they are. And the reason that they don't sponsor that legislation is because they are covering for their lying friends or because they themselves are in that group of liars. Don't buy that for a second. Any congressman can sponsor legislation, and when they do it, there's a big benefit because it shows who's just BSing and who's actually trying to cut government. If you want to get more involved in this process, please go to lp.org and get involved in the Libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Do the adventures of Indiana Jones leave you curious about this exotic and unusual profession? If so, don't miss Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology with Dr. Joseph Schuldenrein. You'll learn about forensics, ancient civilizations, and human origins. Listen to Dr. Schuldenrein and colleagues discuss their excavations and related archaeological topics, ranging from the unique to the sublime, and yes, even the mundane. Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology, live Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. During this segment, I want to use part of today's show, which is going to be the last show before the Libertarian National Convention, to talk about one of the most interesting groups that we're talking to right now. And that's people who have been coming to the Libertarian Party, either from the Democratic Party or from the Republican Party. And there's so many people who've been getting involved over the last few years, so many that I've had the chance to meet, to talk to, who've been active in various ways, and who are really able, in my opinion, to communicate some of the messages of liberty to people who came from a similar background. I myself was one of the few people that always kind of identified with the Libertarian Party since a pretty early age. So while I might not have that particular advantage, I do know some people who can. And today we're actually going to talk to somebody who came to the Libertarian Party not that long ago from the Republican Party. And we're going to talk about one of the big differences between the Libertarian Party and the Republican Party. And that is in some of the ways that the two sides look at foreign policy. And we're going to see why the libertarian message on foreign policy should actually resonate with most people who identify as either Republicans or Democrats. With me right now is John Rogers. John, can you hear me right now?
I sure can.
All right, let me ask you this. You know, somebody who's come over from the Republican side, you know, someone who has primarily, you know, from the Republican side, which for the most part has a very aggressively active foreign policy, to the libertarian side, which believes in more of a kind of a trade-based and free market-based rather than a military-based foreign policy. You know, how's that? What are some of the differences that you've seen, and how have they been for you? I mean, how's that been coming from a totally different area?
Well, you know, it's interesting because as a Republican, I kind of ran the gamut from originally just being really, really conservative to as libertarian as you can get while still being a Republican to just saying, you know, I can't just, it's just not compatible, so I'm just going to become a libertarian. And foreign policy, you know, this is generalizing, of course, but, you know, so much of the Republican policy, foreign policy plank is, like you said, very hawkish, very aggressive. And you know, it's interesting that, you know, in my analysis of it, strong foreign policy is the foreign policy that benefits the United States first and foremost. You know, that was kind of Henry Kissinger's whole concept when he talked about geopolitics and when he played the Russians, the Soviets versus the Chinese for the best interest of the United States. That's just one example. It was for America's best interest. Now, I think that the strongest foreign policy is the one that makes America the most prosperous. And to that end, ultimately, it's the markets that are going to push the overwhelming majority of that momentum forward. There's going to be some military components. There's going to be some non-market components, but for the most part, strong American foreign policy is a free market foreign policy, and most of it's going to be trade related.
Now, what do you say? What do you say to people who say, "Listen, you can talk about markets all day, but the simple fact is, what other people are going to say is that these other countries, they hate us for our prosperity, and they hate us for our political freedoms. How is a market going to address that?" How do you respond to someone who says that?
Well, you know, and I think that's a valid question, but I think that when, and I mean, I've asked myself the question, so I mean, but I think when we ask that, we're not thinking the entire issue through. First off, I think the people that hate us in the world the most part, for the most part, it's for, and this is just my opinion, but, you know, for it's virtually exclusively on a completely incompatible set of values. Now, that's not something that I can bomb you all day and shoot your people all day.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to do any good. But if I can show you that you can have your values, you can have your way of looking at the world, and I can too, but let's get rich together, that's going to be the best way to bridge those gaps between understanding. And I'm not saying that we should placate the people who want to kill us. I mean, I'm not saying we should give them, hold hands and sing kumbaya, but I am saying that there's a carrot and a stick. There's the short term where we have to deal with the people who they just want to kill us flat out. They want to destroy us, what we stand for, et cetera, and they're never going to change. Those are the people that you really can't, they don't really care. They may not care about trade that much, but in the long term, what's in the long term interest of everyone is increasing prosperity, because if you have prosperity in your life and in your community's life and in your country's life, chances are you're going to be a lot less inclined to want to go out and start trouble.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a huge amount of truth to that. I mean, if somebody has you know, wealthy, has a business that they're dedicated to, has a job that they care about, you know, has something to live for, it's kind of a little harder to convince them to go on a suicide bombing run. But
yeah.
If because of bombing and trade sanctions and all that kind of stuff, they don't have that, well, then, you know, it's a little bit of an easier pitch. And I think you're right. We should be making that as hard a pitch as possible. We want it to be just, you know, we want it to be as difficult as it would be to walk into Orange County and say, listen, anybody here want to go suicide bomb? And people, you know, no one's going to really take you up on the offer. That's what it should be like. And you're right. It's trade that gets us there. You know, one of the interesting arguments that I've heard a lot lately is that when you engage in trade, you have to engage in marketing and advertising. And that requires, at the very least, just understanding the other culture. Like, you can't market at all, you know, a product to Americans without at some level understanding some part of American culture, unless you're only selling, you know, just raw commodities or something like that.
Right.
Do you think that there's a kind of a cultural exchange that happens along with this economic benefit that could actually work to make us safer?
I think so. And, you know, and when you were talking about that, two examples came to light right off the top of my head. The first was some American car company, I think it was in the 80s, and I can't remember the name of the car, but the name of the car in English translated to small penis in Spanish. And they were wondering why they weren't selling any cars in Latin America, because they didn't bother to translate the name of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Another example is kind of funny. When they realized that they renamed the car and they started selling them, and I wish I knew more details, but off the top of my head, I don't. But another one is, for years and years and years and years and years, the United States would not sell cars in Japan where the steering wheel is on the right side of the car, because they drive like they do in Britain. They would drive on the wrong side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese just weren't buying. That's one reason why they wouldn't buy American cars for so long. It wasn't necessarily because of bad trade policy or, you know, underhanded trade policy on the part of the Japanese. A lot of it was they just didn't want to buy the cars because you couldn't drive them in the country. So those are just two examples, small picture examples, I think, of what you're saying. I do think that if you want to sell, and I'm not a marketing specialist, that's not my background, but if you do want to sell something to someone with any kind of significantly different cultural set of factors, you should take that into account. I think that's just good, smart business. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you do that, you're gonna make money.
Now, one thing before we run out of time, I want to ask, You know, what advice would you give to people who are either new to the Libertarian Party or, you know, kind of feeling dissatisfied in their original parties, whether it's Democratic or Republican? How would you advise people to go about getting started or learning? What would you say that they should consider?
As it pertains to foreign policy or just in general?
Oh, no, just in general. Just in general.
I would ask them the question that Ronald Reagan asked in 1984, are you better off than you were, not necessarily 4 years ago, but X number of years ago, you know, that if the Republican Party, I'm not even going to talk about the Democrats. I was never a Democrat, thank God. But if you think, and this applies to both parties in my opinion, if you think that increased government spending, because let's face it, the Republicans aren't any more serious about cutting the debt and the deficit than the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
If you think increasingly complicated and potentially damaging overseas commitments, if you think that no end in sight for entitlement programs and no real plans to get Social Security, the pension, looming pension crisis and so on, taken care of in a pragmatic, realistic way. If that doesn't bother you, or you think that they have it in hand, then don't become a libertarian, because there's no reason to.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people would think that at least a few of those things are legitimate problems. I would simply say, do what I did. Say, what are the plans for, in my case, the Republicans, to fix the problem? And I just kind of came up with, okay, I'm not talking about what are you talking about doing. I'm saying, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was not enough, if anything.
Absolutely.
And so I became a libertarian.
And I think that makes I think that's excellent advice, and I hope many people follow. John, we are out of time, but thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on the show today.
Thank you. Have a lot of fun. Thank you.
Guys, we just finished talking with John Rogers, who, recent Republican turned libertarian, getting his perspective on that process and what are some of the reasons that he wanted to change. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You've heard of good things coming in packages. Well, maybe there's a little more to that saying. But when you think about it, packaging is one of the most important things that can represent your business. Tune into Ditch the Box with host David Marinak. Each week, we'll discuss flexible packaging, marketing, sales, and how it all comes together in one container. Lower costs, increased margins. Listen to the show. It might just save you a ton. Ditch the Box is heard live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is Rich Turvey. He's running for U.S. Congress in Indiana's 6th District. Rich, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you today? Going great. Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you this. If you're elected to Congress, do you see any parts, or so which parts of U.S. foreign policy that need to be reduced or scaled back in any way?
Well, the first thing I think that we would need to do is have a viable and valid plan that would allow us to shut off the flow of foreign aid.
Mm-hmm.
I think last year it was at $62 billion, the last mm-hmm. figure that I saw. And I understand that we cannot just completely turn off the faucet. But we need a viable exit strategy, something that we haven't had in the last 50 years.
Now, what are some of the benefits? And this is, you know, it's something that our first guest also mentioned, that foreign aid has just really gotten out of hand. What are some of the benefits of getting the government out of foreign aid? I mean, how do we as Americans, or how do other people benefit when that happens?
Well, the first thing that it would do, it would increase the flow of money back into our economy, either through the tax breaks that U.S. citizens would see, or in the increased spending in some of the programs that are currently underfunded within our government.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Do you believe that in the long term that, you know, through programs like whether it's Kickstarter or something else, do you think that this is a gap? This aid is a gap that can be filled through voluntary and private means, or is it just like we just pull out and say that's all we can do?
No, I absolutely 100% believe that there are organizations and people out that will step in and do work. My wife, for instance, just got back in March on a mission trip that we paid for out of our own pocket for her to go and help deliver food and clothing to orphans in Ethiopia. You know, we didn't ask the government's assistance. There's an organization called Hope for Cora where they deliver meals to children, school-age children in Ethiopia. And this organization was started because someone saw a need and decided that they were going to make a difference. And that's where people need to step in and make a difference.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that some of the aspects of aid that are, you know, like very large, like infrastructure development, could that be something even that could be filled through the private sector?
Definitely could see the opportunity for countries to advance through aid, like you're talking about, infrastructure development. I mean, how many construction companies wouldn't love the opportunity to go in and help rebuild a nation and still make money in the process?
Let's talk about one of the, and you know, I think what's been for many people one of the more surreal parts of foreign policy over the last several years, which is this idea of using the military rather than as a mechanism for defense, as a mechanism for this kind of nation building, where, you know, it steps out of the traditional role of what we think of a military as being and into the role of developing all kinds of other things that are not really military in nature. Well, what are your views on that particular use of the military?
That is a position that's near and dear to me. I am a 17-year Army veteran, still serving in the Army Reserve. Worked as a field artillery officer from a young age up until now, where I'm a computer simulations officer. And spent 28 months in Iraq. The first 13 months, we were chasing weapons of mass destruction, looking for IED makers, things of that nature. Now, my second deployment, I was a unit commander. And in that deployment, we helped to rebuild and reset the infrastructure in a city called Numania, Iraq. About 90,000 people live there. Now, mind you, I received no training to do this. I was going by the seat of my pants for my 11th grade government classes, I think. That's the best way that I could lead this. But I think that the military is ill-equipped to do that. I wasn't prepared. We had good results. I made some very good, lasting relationships. We made some great strides, but I don't think that that's the proper use of our military. It was definitely put me and the soldiers that I was fortunate enough to lead way out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky. We were in an area where they were open to the ideas that we put forward.
And that, it's interesting because as we go through this, like, you know, like second and third and 20th and 50th and 100th, like, stage of each of these operations, it seems like a larger and larger percentage of our troops are more involved in things like this and less involved in the things that, you know, the military is traditionally used for. And there is unquestionably in my mind, and if this is wrong, let me know, but there's unquestionably in my mind a loss of efficiency. I mean, a doctor could be a great doctor, but if you say, like, now you need to build a house, you might need 10 of those doctors to do what an expert house builder might do just by himself. Is that something that also applies in this situation?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I took cooks, mechanics, chemical specialists and trained them the first deployment into a mobile infantry platoon. Mm-hmm. We were definitely out of our element. We patrolled streets daily. The second deployment, I had field artillerymen. We're used to reaching out long distances, not up close and personal. But we were doing key leader engagements. We were going to city council, county council, district council meetings, meeting with sheikhs. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely a learning experience for everyone involved.
Now, let me ask you this: as someone you know who's experienced so much of that, if you're like, what are some of the ways in which you think that you'll be reducing different aspects of the government, having seen, you know, infrastructure development, all this kind of, what are some of the ways, either domestic or foreign, that you would sponsor legislation to reduce either the spending of government or the limitations on individual freedom or whatever other part?
Well, one of the big things that I would reduce would be government contracting. Mm-hmm. The way that businesses go about getting contracts with the government is a flawed process. I mean, mm-hmm. why should the U.S. government pay for the development of things that we're seeking bids for? That makes no sense to me. For the Department of Defense this year, they're looking at replacing the M9 pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's been a pistol that's been in use since the Korean War, or shortly right around the Vietnam War. However, the Department of Defense has decided they want to replace it, and they've sent out specifications for bid. They spent all the money coming up with the specifications. Why not go out to industry, say, hey, we want a new handgun. See what comes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Let Beretta, let Colt, let Smith & Wesson, let them bear the expense of the development and just let us be a consumer. If you're going to spend taxpayers' money, just spend it as a consumer and not as a developer.
I think that makes a huge amount of sense. Now, before we run out of time, Rich, if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, is there a good website, Facebook page, something that they should follow?
Definitely. They should go to turveyforcongress.org or turveyforcongress on Facebook, Facebook/turveyforcongress. Or they can follow me on Twitter with turvey4congress.
Awesome. Rich, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
No, thank you. It was very nice. Appreciate it.
And guys, just as a clarification, that's spelled T-U-R-V-E-Y, 4, and the word is spelled F-O-R, Congress, on both Facebook and as a .org. And now you've heard from a few different folks about ways in which we need to reduce some of our role in foreign policy, contracting around foreign policy, and all of these things. And I would bet that a lot of these sound like they're pretty good ideas. Most of you are probably saying, like, you know, that makes sense. Why, when I go to a restaurant, I don't first pay the chef to go and get some lessons, nor do I give him the specifications and have him test it out. No, I just go to different restaurants, see which chefs are the best, and I just kind of pick whichever one I like the most, thinking about my personal taste, thinking about price, quality, whatever. And we realized that it would be great if the U.S. government did that too. It would save us a lot of money. It would save us a huge amount of money. And while it might make a few defense lobbyists unhappy, it would make basically everyone else in the entire country a lot happier. Now, why is that not happening yet? Well, one, it's in the process. But two, it hasn't happened yet because we need you to get involved. We need you to run for office. We need you to join a campaign. Lobbyists aren't going to do this for us. We're working against these multi-million dollar lobbying firms. We are working against these huge contractors. We are working against the most politically connected people in the world, and they're not going to do this for us. We have to do this ourselves. And if you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org/states. You can get involved in a campaign in your state. You can get involved in social media or in traditional media. In fact, you might even decide to run for office. But that first step, please go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Rich Turvey. He's running for Congress in Indiana. We'll be right back.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
Want an insider's pass to everything that goes on in Hollywood? Join Summer Helene every week for Behind the Scenes. Summer Helene is known as the Duchess of Hollywood because she knows the insiders, legends, and celebs, and brings the stories, the gossip, and the backstage scoop. It's the real Hollywood, though. So this program is for adults only. Behind the Scenes can be heard live every Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. You know, there's this weird temptation that we have, which is to assume that if we win a war or if we go to battle and defeat an enemy, that we somehow get some magic benefits from that. As in, let's say we go to war with Iraq, then we all get a bunch of oil. Now, listen, we've supposedly beaten Iraq twice in war. I haven't gotten this oil. I don't think you have either. War is profitable, but it doesn't mean it's profitable for you and me. Who is it profitable for? Who actually benefits when we go to war? The number one group that benefits are the people that Rich was just talking about in the last segment. Defense contractors. Those are the people who sell the weapons that the government needs to purchase in order to go to war. If the government goes to a justifiable war, an important war, defense contractors make a lot of money. If governments go to a totally stupid and unnecessary war, defense contractors make a lot of money. That's why they spend so much money lobbying. Several years ago, during the 6 weeks of the Iraqi surge, according to the Huffington Post, they spent about $50,000 per congressman and senator. And that's like in just a few weeks. The amount of spending that they're putting in, they're only doing that because they're expecting to get more out. Just like any investor, they're only going to spend $50 if they plan to get back at least $50.01, but probably a lot more than $50.01 for each $50 they spend. If you want to see that end, you have to get out of their rhetoric. You have to stop believing the lies that they tell. Listen, those guys aren't just good at marketing Congress. They're good at marketing everybody. they're good at tricking everybody. That's their job. They're marketing firms. These lobbying firms are definitionally in the job of persuading people to do something that's probably not to the benefit of their targets, but certainly to the benefits of their clients. We routinely hear, for example, that NATO is this extremely important force for good. Long after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, we're still clinging to this idea. We need to have NATO. NATO has to be there. NATO has to be there defending everyone from everything all the time. But the fact is, right now, in NATO, we're like the smart kid in a high school group project of a bunch of dumb kids. We're the smart kid who's expected to do all the work, to figure out all the answers, who's going to get the A while all the dumb kids do nothing. Right now, those dumb kids are pretty much all the other NATO countries. Right now, they're not doing anything. They're happy to let us do everything. But as happy as they are, you want to know who's even happier? You want to know who's much happier than any of our NATO supposed allies? I'll tell you who, the U.S. defense contractors. Because if we do our share and buy all those weapons from American defense contracting companies, and then we do all the other shares of all the other NATO countries and still buy all of that from those same American defense contractors, of course those defense contractors are going to be happy. Of course they're going to put in lobbying money to convince us that we need to stay involved in these ridiculous one-sided alliances like NATO that basically requires to spend a huge amount of money for everybody else's defense, allowing other countries to be as reckless and indifferent as they want to, knowing that we're going to come to their rescue. I believe that we should begin by shutting down every foreign base entirely. I say we should give a 24-hour warning and just get out. Let other countries provide for their own defense. That's not our job to take care of everyone in the world all the time. I mean, as much as I think it's ridiculous for us to, you know, take care to provide welfare for Americans, I think it makes a lot less sense for us to provide welfare for people in entire other countries. And that's just ridiculous. And I don't just mean the foreign aid that a few of the guests today talked about. I also mean this military welfare, where we just for free, like idiots, provide the defense for free for all the other countries in this so-called alliance. There is nothing to be gained by staying in NATO at all. Yeah, Lockheed Martin and Northrop and those guys want us to stay in NATO, but there's nothing for you and I to gain. Here's what happens if we just pull out of NATO. First, you have more money. We don't have to pay for the defense of 50 countries. We have to pay for the defense of one country. And you know what? It's a lot cheaper to pay for the defense of just one country, especially one that's blocked on both sides by giant oceans, than to pay for the defense of every single other country in the entire alliance. The second thing is it forces private companies to start engaging in less reckless practices. If you want to know, for example, why companies like Exxon don't spend a lot more on biodiesel, one of the many reasons is that we've made it cheaper for them to buy oil. We keep our military in the Middle East so that Exxon can keep on getting oil from them. But guess what? Exxon's not idiots. If we pulled those troops out today, they're going to say, okay, this is now a little bit more risky. Let's start investing in some alternatives. If you just care about the environment and don't even care about money, if you just want to protect the environment, that's reason enough to pull our troops out of almost every country that we're in right now, if not every single country. What other benefits? We make more allies because we start opening ourselves up for trade. Instead of getting involved in these military alliances that shut out other countries in terms of trade, we start trading with everybody. And you know what happens when we trade with everybody? Two things. One, we all get richer because trade makes wealth. But something else happens. We have a beautiful sharing of ideas. If somebody in Iran wants to sell a product to Americans, step one, they're going to have to learn a little bit about American culture. And that means they're graphic designers, their assistants, their kids, their family, their friends are going to be exposed more and more to these ideas of freedom, democracy, religious freedom, religious tolerance, tolerance of different viewpoints, of different personal orientations. That's what trade gets us, and that's what war doesn't get us. Because I promise you this, if you think that we're going to, that bombing a country into agreeing with us, it's not going to work at all. But trading with a country is going to spread our values more effectively, more quickly, and more powerfully than any other method. Trade is far more effective because it brings us much closer together, because we have that those bonds, not just of mutual benefit, which are good, but those bonds of mutual marketing and mutual advertising, which require us to learn about each other's culture. Now listen, if you want to make some of these things happen, if you want there to be more peace, if you want more money, if you want more prosperity, if you want the great ideas of American culture, of religious freedom, of democracy, of tolerance, to be able to spread around the world in a way that works, not in a stupid way that doesn't do anything, please go to lp.org. Find ways to get involved. You can get involved in the campaign in your state. You can get involved in social media or traditional media activism in your state. In fact, you might even decide to run for office, making the biggest contribution that you possibly can to the cause of liberty. Thanks for listening today. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.